So I will hand over to Bernie to bring us the book of Proverbs. Thank you, Bernie.
Thanks, Graham. It's good to be here again tonight. It's, again, a bit weird speaking to an empty room, but I'm used to speaking to myself. So the book of Proverbs, and you might be thinking, well, that's a bit of a strange book to try and tackle, because it's bits and pieces and there doesn't seem to be any logic there. And for me, it's one of these books that I read years ago and possibly haven't touched for, I don't know, 10 years at least. Well, earlier this year, I was out in Uganda with a guy called Paul Wintle, who used to be at Green Street. And he came back one day and he said, "Hey, Bernie, I met this man in a village." And he came up to me and said, "Would you like to take my daughter as your wife?" And Paul Wintle just refused him graciously and said to him, "I'm happily unmarried." Well, for the rest of the week, or in fact 2 weeks, every opportunity I got, I would turn around to Paul and suggest he chose a woman to get married to. And his response was to come back with a proverb. Now, just to give you an idea, he'd say, "A wife's quarrelling is a continual dripping of rain," which isn't exactly positive. Other times he'd turn around and say, "Like a gold ring in a pig's snout is a beautiful woman without sense." And he had all these proverbs to throw at me, and I had nothing to throw back. And so I said to him, "It'd be a bit of a laugh if when we get back, we can just throw proverbs at each other." And so I thought I'd take a closer look at the book. Well, there's a serious side to it as well. In fact, recently on Facebook, a friend of mine put up a report by a guy called Wayne Grundem, who some of you know wrote a brilliant systematic theology book. And he is answering a critic who questioned his decision to vote for Trump in the elections. This critic said it put his credibility as a theologian and as a charismatic at risk. And Wayne just simply came back and said, "Well, there's only two real parties to choose from. And if you vote for a third party, you'd be throwing away an opportunity to influence the government of the nation by voting for good laws and policies." He voted Trump despite his character flaws. He voted Trump because he felt it was better policies to help the oppressed. But he then quotes Proverbs 3:27, which simply says, "Do not withhold good from those whom it is due, when it is in your power to do it." And so you can actually go through Proverbs and pick out something to suit whatever's happening in your life. I'm sure for every circumstance, there's something there. The only problem is you've got to search hard to find it. So let me start just with a quick introduction to the book itself. It's believed Solomon wrote it, except the last two chapters have got the name of Agur and King Lemuel as their authors, and we don't know much about those two characters. There's a suggestion in 25:1 that talks about the officials of King Hezekiah, suggesting it was written around 700 BC. But to be quite honest, I'm not one of the sorts of people who really is too worried about that. It's part of wisdom literature, and includes Ecclesiastes and Job, and it uses all sorts of styles to attract your attention and to share things with you. Some of it is poetry, so you can't take it literally. I'll give you an example in 13:25. It ends with, "The righteous have enough to satisfy their appetite, but the belly of the wicked is empty." And if you take that literally, it's suggesting that those who are God's people will never go hungry. And yet I could take you to places where I know people are going hungry every day. So a lot of the things you cannot take literally, but you can get the idea that for most Christians, perhaps I'm wrong there, but for certainly a good number, we don't go hungry. There's other ways that it's written where it's using comparisons to say this is like this, or some of them identical, others are direct opposites. But what's the best way of reading it is one of the questions you might be asking. Someone suggested that it's not like a film. You can't start at the beginning and work your way through it to the end and sit there and think, right, I know the story. It's more like going to an art gallery where you wander around slowly and you stop and deliberately view each picture and you think about it and you perhaps come to conclusions about it. And then you move on to the next one, which is totally different, perhaps a totally different painter. And I guess that is true about Proverbs, because you can go in and you can read one verse, think about it, move on to the next one, which has got nothing to do with the one you've just read. So it's not like a normal book or anything like that. And if I was going to do a summary of it, it's very much a picture of a father speaking metaphorically of two women that his son could choose to follow. One of them is Woman Wisdom, who some people suggest could be Jesus. The other one is Woman Folly. And his father is crying out to his son. He's begging him. He's speaking from his heart to his son's heart, saying, look, make the right decisions in life. Don't make the wrong decisions. And his father is pleading and pleading that he will follow the words of Woman Wisdom. So I guess now you've got to start asking yourself, what's a wise choice? Well, let me say for a start, I've made a few wise choices in my life. I better say this, as she's not here, but my wife is one of them. And she is a wife who has looked after me for the last 45 years. That's why I'm so good looking and young looking. But she is someone who spends all her life trying to help others and to care for others. But I've made some absolutely foolish decisions in my life as well. And I won't mention any, but perhaps you will know me well enough to know where I've made some mistakes. So what is wisdom? And John Drane, who's a theologian, said it is not common sense, it is not human insight. So what he does is refers you to look at 1 Kings. And the reason you look at 1 Kings is that's where we see Solomon. And he turns around 1 Kings 3 verse 9, and it simply says this. And now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king in a place of my father David. Although I am only a little child, I do not know how to go out or to come in. So here is a young man who perhaps is not old enough to govern. He's been given land and people to look after. So he turns around to God and he asks for 2 things. He says in verse 9, give your servant therefore an understanding mind to govern your people, able to discern between good and evil. For who can govern this, your great people? So Solomon has been given, or he's asking for wisdom from God. And in chapter 4, verse 29, God gave Solomon very great wisdom, discernment and breadth of understanding as vast as the sand on the seashore, so that Solomon's wisdom surpassed the wisdom of all the people of the East and all the wisdom of Egypt. And later on it says he composed 3,000 proverbs, which we will look at possibly 1 or 2 tonight. But what he was saying, simply this, that wisdom, real wisdom, is God-given. Real wisdom is something that you learn in life. And if you go through Kings and just look at different things that Solomon understands, it says that he understood amazing practical skills, discernment, understanding of subjects like botany, zoology, poetry, as well as being able to resolve political disputes. He's a sort of king or leader we all want, somebody who's just absolutely amazing. How else could you put it? So why was this book written? And the first seven verses could be summarized as to find true blessing in life and escape the snares and pitfalls of sin. A guy called Derek Kinder simply said, it offers a key to life. It's written so that young people and older people like myself will not make the same mistakes that elders have made. And if I want to look at a key verse, I turn to the first chapter and to verse 7. And it says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. The fear of the Lord. So what is the fear of the Lord? Well, it's not a big bully who tells you what to do, forces you, makes you do things you don't want to do. The fear of the Lord is simply having a continual awareness that you're in the presence of a holy, a just and almighty God. Every motive, every thought, every word, every action that we do is before him and judged by him. So it's being aware that God knows everything, even the things that we perhaps would like to be kept a secret. So here we go now into the book of Proverbs a bit more. So we've got an idea of what it's about. But the first seven chapters is addressed to my son, and it occurs 15 times in the first seven chapters. And as I said earlier, it's the heartbeat of a parent wanting the best for his child, wanting his child to heed his advice to avoid life's booby traps and to develop and to grow into a fully rounded adult with expertise in many practical things in everyday life. And verse 9 in that chapter simply says, for they are a fair garland for your head and pendants for your neck. Simply saying that, you know, by being obedient and following the instructions of the Father, that they will have honour amongst men. And a real relationship with God. But when we look on chapter 1 and go from verse 10, it says, my child, if sinners entice you, do not consent. And this is one of the keys to the book. You've got a choice. We've all got a choice of what we do, of which decision we make, of which path we follow. And the next 9 verses or 8 verses really talks about what happens when you get in with the wrong crowd. And what's it like today? You often hear that, you know, somebody has done something and it's not their fault. They've simply got in with the wrong crowd. They've simply gone along with some other group of people, their friends or someone. And the father's saying, if sinners entice you, you've got the choice, but make the right decision. Have the strength to say no. And what follows is a picture of the perfect crime. And we've all seen them on TV, I'm sure. And it includes things like violence, perhaps a bit of murder. But the key thing about this crime is that you won't get caught. And at the end of it, you'll have enough wealth to last you for your life. It's going to be fantastic, folks. Come and join our gang and you won't regret it one bit. And verse 19 really brings it to a close. It says, such is the end of all who are greedy for gain. It takes away the life of its possessors. In other words, these get-rich schemes will end up in disaster and destruction. Let me introduce 2 other characters. I have mentioned one of them, but Woman Wisdom, which I said is thought to be a symbol of Jesus by some people. And there's also an evil woman, a sinful woman, who portrays the temptations of the ungodly world. And both of these crop up as you go through Proverbs, trying to reach out to folk going by and to attract them with what they're offering. And verse 20, and going on sort of here and there in the next few chapters, is wisdom's plea to the passers-by. And it, as you read it, you'll find that wisdom is crying out and going to different places, key positions in the town where people congregate, where people would hear her. And she, her concern is that everybody hears. But she mentions three groups in particular right at the beginning in verse 22. How long, O simple ones, the simple, the naive, the impressionable, the easily led astray. She talks about the scoffers who treat wisdom with contempt. And she talks about the fools who refuse instruction, who are conceited and self-opinionated. And this chapter, as wisdom is crying out to people to listen to her, to follow her, ends with, but those who listen to me will be secure and will live at ease without dread of disaster. And again, this is perhaps a general policy, but no one can turn around and say, if I listen to wisdom, there will be no disasters in my life. Nobody can say that, because we can't guarantee what is going to happen. But wisdom is crying out. Wisdom is offering you the right decision, the right path to follow. And chapter 2, I really enjoyed this, because being someone in IT in a lot of my life, it looks like a computer program, because it starts off, my child, if you accept my words and treasure up my commandments within you, making your ear attentive to wisdom and inclining your heart to understanding, if you indeed cry out for insight and raise your voice for understanding, if you seek it like silver and search for it as hidden treasure. So we've got if, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom from his mouth. And you start reading this and you've got this whole picture of these are the paths that you take, and then here's the rewards that will follow. You'll understand righteousness. You'll understand justice. And this theme of following and doing things follows on through the next few chapters as well. And including one of the commentaries suggested in chapter 3, it was talking about the lordship of God over your life. And you being, it is in sort of verse, I guess, 9, honour the Lord with your substance and with the first fruits of your produce. An idea of being a good steward of everything that God has given you. And then it says, then your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will be bursting with wine. And it's this call again to follow, to be obedient and to make the right decisions. It goes on and on with this sort of opportunity for you to follow the right path and to walk with God. Chapter 5 introduces a character who, I don't know if you've ever met her, but this idea of the loose woman. It has some incredible descriptions. I won't go through them with you, but yeah, I've never read 50 Shades of Grey, but I've heard of people sort of saying that, yeah, if you want to know about the other side of life, that's the book you got to read. But yeah, some of the descriptions here, you just find absolutely amazing. But this whole thing, verse 14 and 15, I'm going to in chapter 5, there's the talk about the loose woman with her lips dripping with honey, her speech is smoother than oil, but in the end she's bitter as wormwood. But there's some descriptions of what she does and the length she goes to attract you to follow her. She could be talking about anything in life. You could be talking about pornography, drugs, alcohol, any addiction that takes control of your life very often start with looking so attractive that you want to go down that path. But yeah, the Father's crying out throughout this, don't follow that route. Don't follow that route. Because, and this is where verse 14 and 15 comes in, do not enter the path of the wicked and do not walk the way of the evildoers, because it leads to destruction. And I've just lost my place in my Bible, but it talks about, now I am at the point of utter ruin in public assembly. Yeah, it's your reputation that's been totally destroyed. It's your family that's been totally destroyed. It's friendships that have been destroyed. It's your relationship with God. All these things have been broken because of you going astray and following the wrong path. And verse 15 starts off, it says, drink water from your own cistern. And I don't think it's talking about drinking toilet water or anything like that. But simply, this passage goes on to say that, you know, married people should only find sexual satisfaction within their marriage. You know, you could go through it, read it for yourself, and it would keep on saying, don't do this, follow this way. Keep within those marriage relationships. Why? Because in verse 21 it says this, for human ways are under the eyes of the Lord, and he examines all their paths. So something we do in secret that we think we might get away with, and I'm suggesting that, you know, adultery is one of these things that you perhaps hope nobody finds out about it, but God knows. That takes us back to that chapter 1, verse 7. God knows. The fear of the Lord is the thing that keeps us on that straight path, because it's the fear of the Lord is the start of wisdom. But you could go on and on. I just want to quickly look at two verses that sort of look as though they're out of place, because into chapter 6, again, you've got sort of this man is crying out to his child to avoid certain things, and you know, one of them is laziness, another one is deception, another one is making pledges to people, such as, you know, signing at the bottom line to say if they've taken out a loan, you'll pay it all if they default. In the middle of this, it says, thieves are not despised who steal only to satisfy their appetite when they are hungry. Yet if they are caught, they will pay sevenfold. They will forfeit all the goods of their house. And it looks a bit odd to be in that position, but simply saying there that if you steal because you're starving, you will have to pay the price for it. But once you've paid that price, it's over. But if you commit adultery, you go on paying for the rest of your life. Yeah, it's a warning to us all. But we need to move on, because the clock up there says it's now nearly 7 o'clock, and I've hardly got anywhere. But yeah, this whole book is full of all sorts of verses that try and lead us to live a life that is honouring to God. Yeah, it talks about riches do not profit in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. It talks about how we should respond to people, and especially those who perhaps are a little bit hot-headed. There's quite a few verses talking about rash words are like sword thrusts, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. One who is quick-tempered acts foolishly, and the schemer is hated. Whoever is slow to anger has great understanding, but one who has a hasty temper exalts folly. And it goes on and on, talking about all sorts of things. Here's one, perhaps, for the government. Where there is no guidance, a nation falls, but in an abundance of counsellors, there is safety. Righteousness exalts a nation, but sin as a reproach to any people. So, yeah, I'm not going to go through the book and go through each verse and pick out all these different things that jump and I enjoy looking at. What I'm going to do now is I originally started looking at every verse that talked about the Lord, and I suddenly realized that there's so many of them I couldn't do that. Let me just throw a few verses, because in there, again and again, I think it's about 11 times, it talks of this is an abomination to the Lord. And I had to look up that word because I've heard of the abominable snowman, of course, but I couldn't quite work out how that fitted in with God. But what it simply said was there are things that God hates. And it's important to grasp this, that you know, so often nowadays we're taught about the love of God and how he loves us, and he hates sin. And God hates many things. And that this perhaps is a good book for somebody who's a new Christian to read, because suddenly you're faced with things that are black and white. God hates certain things. And let me just throw one in. Chapter 3, verse 31, it talks about the perverse or the violent or the oppressor. People who are deliberately obstinate. People who are deliberately unreasonable. No matter how they appear on the surface, it says they may appear to be successful, but God says do not envy them, because it is the upright who will be taken into his confidence. So, yeah, if we're obstinate and unreasonable, God is not happy with this. And yeah, I'll be honest, I've met many of them in church meetings, and I can even remember times when I was that person, when even when my best friends were saying, Bernie, you are wrong, I would say, look, I'm not changing my mind. In my head, I knew I was wrong, but would I admit it? No. But God hates that sort of action. There are other things that he hates, and so you can go through. I want you to go to this book and read it and look. But there are many things in chapter 11, verse 1. It says, a false balance is an abomination to the Lord, but an accurate weight is his delight. What's it talking about? It's the same as in 2010. Let me just quickly skip to that and mention it. 2010 says, diverse weights and diverse measures are both like an abomination to the Lord. It's talking about being a crooked merchant. It's about having two sets of standards, one for yourself, one for somebody else. These are things that disgust God. He does not like dishonest practices, whether it's at work, in your social life, at home, in church, or in school. The book says, doesn't say do as I say, but it says, you know, you've got to do, well, sorry, I'm getting that wrong. Don't do as I do, but do as I say. You've got to be obedient in these things. You've got to avoid setting different standards for yourself and for others. And God expects the highest standards of each one of us. I was in a Zoom meeting recently, and somebody who runs a local garage, and I won't tell you which one, but they said that when customers come in, they go to a drawer to get the price book out, and they've got several different prices that they bring out. If you're just a customer and says, can you fix this, they go to this one. But if you start showing how good you are and you've tried to fix it and you've failed to do it, the price goes up. I just hope this guy was joking, but I've got a feeling that he wasn't. And I've noticed when I've been on holiday, when a cruise ship comes into port, the prices rise up. Yeah, it's different standards for different people. And chapter 28, verse 6 says this, better to be poor and walk in integrity than to be crooked in one's ways, even though rich. And that word integrity is something that, yeah, as soon as you lose it, as soon as you do something wrong and you lose your integrity, you've lost everything. Yeah, I'll confess to something. I was away. Somebody asked me if I'd done something a couple of years ago. And I thought, oh, no, I haven't. And I said, yeah, I've done that. And the longer I spent with this person, the more uneasy I felt. I was really in my mind thinking, oh, I've just lied to him. I've just lied. Oh, yeah, it's only a little white lie. It wasn't a big one. It didn't really, but I lied. I said something that wasn't the whole truth. And, you know, if you turn to chapter 12, verse 22, God hates lying lips. And I told a lie, and I was feeling more and more comfortable the longer I spent with this person in there. And I had to turn around and say, look, I'm sorry, but I lied to you. I did not lock that door. It was a locking of a door that I hadn't done. And wow, it's like a weight being lifted off my shoulders when I told this guy that I hadn't done it. But at that moment, I thought, yeah, here I am, claiming to be a Christian, and I've let God down here. My integrity is gone. That's why we should never lie. These white lies, these half-truths that we sometimes use, should we really be doing that? These are just examples of some of the things that God hates. God hates. And we should certainly be speaking the truth and acting honestly. I'm going to quickly just cover a couple of other things before I bring this to an end, because Graham is falling asleep, but luckily you can't see that. But first of all, I just want to say that years ago I was told to look for Jesus in all the Old Testament. Wherever you go, look for Jesus. And I struggled to find him in Proverbs. I struggled to find him mentioned clearly where I can say, that is definitely Jesus. But can I simply say that if you go through the book of Proverbs, every now and then you come across something, you think, wow, that reminds me of Jesus. That's something that just stirs up your heart and say, wow, isn't that just like Jesus, the sort of thing he says, sort of thing he does. It talks in 8:17 of those who seek me diligently find me. That's woman wisdom. And isn't it true that those who seek after Jesus will find him? And read through it. Every now and then your heart will be warmed up because you'll find something that talks clearly or reminds you of the person of Jesus Christ. But let me move on quickly, because I wanted to respond to Paul. Because here's this poor lad who is unmarried and perhaps has got the wrong impression of what our wives are like. And Proverbs speaks more about the goodness of a wife than it does about the nagging wife. In chapter 12, verse 4, it says, a good wife is the crown of her husband. And let me say that the majority of the last chapter, if you turn to chapter 31, is about the wife. And it's all incredibly positive about her. I said earlier on that it's the words of King Lemuel, and we don't know who he is, and we don't know who his mother is. There are suggestions in some commentaries, but she gives him some really good advice. And then starting in verse 10 of chapter 31, it's this picture of a wife. And I want to thank David. That's not King David this time, but David Wilkins, because he turned around and said, Bernie, did you know that a good Jewish husband will recite these words to his wife about once a month to give thanks to her for who she is? It's got things, a capable wife, who can find? So it's suggesting there straight away that it might be difficult, but I've done it. I've met a wife who has put up with me for a long time. I'm sure Graham will jump up and down and say, Suzanne has been an absolutely brilliant wife. And there's loads and loads of people, those that are watching tonight, those that are going to watch in the future weeks, will say, oh, that is my wife. But It talks about she is far more precious than jewels. She's far more precious than all the riches you can get your hands on. And the heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. Well, it goes on. That I won't go through every verse and sort of, that's for you to read. But it talks about a capable wife. So you're really saying that you're a lucky man if you found her. Hold on to her. Don't let her go. For she is really valuable to you. And there's a list of things that she does. And it gives this picture of a woman is incredibly busy working hard to support her family, working hard to help other people that are in need. And in verse 23, it says, her husband is known in the city gates, taking his seat among the elders of the land. Yeah, that this wife is so good, so capable, so wonderful, that her husband is able to get on with his business without any fear of the things that are going on at home. He knows and trusts his wife will look after the home. He's got no doubts in her abilities. He goes on to say she's dignified, wise. She teaches kindness. She's never idle. Her children and her husband praise her. She's one who fears the Lord. We get back to chapter 1, verse 7. The fear of the Lord. She fears the Lord and deserves praise in the highest places. And yeah, this chapter 31, yeah, is an incredible thing when you're thinking of looking for a wife. Yeah, if you find a wife described here, you are the richest person in the world. And all you husbands listening in tonight, perhaps we ought to go home, and it's me as well as you, perhaps we ought to go home, open up Proverbs chapter 31, and just recite some of this off to her and say, thank you for being such a brilliant wife. But the book of Proverbs, let me just sum it up, is a book of instruction on how to live a godly life here on earth and how to be assured of a reward in the life to come. It imparts God's wisdom. It shouldn't be read as promises, black and white, but rather as principles for our everyday life. But the ultimate message in the book of Proverbs is that fearing the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. There's no greater principle as taught by both David and Solomon than acknowledging God's presence in everything in life and taking heed to everything he says. I want to end with a quote from a guy called Mike Worthing, who's down at St. Mary's Island Church, said to me a couple of weeks ago when I shared some things about Proverbs with him, he just simply said, human nature has not changed. So perhaps now we ought to start paying attention to what God says to us through the book of Proverbs. Back to you, Graham.
Okay. Thank you, Bernie. I quite like Proverbs 18:22, which talks about how a wife is a blessing to the person who finds one. Now, this is the complicated bit, at least for me, where we go to the Zoom meeting.